Last week was so enticing and that we wanted to do a part two of it. And we know that some of you went home and were like, "Woo, where do I start?" So we want to get a little bit more practical today and get to that. We're going to go into small groups. If you do not know your small group or you are new tonight, you let me know and I will redirect you to a small group, or you can just pick one on your own. I am totally fine with all of that. So we're going to start and we're going to go into, as I said, this is kind of part two. So our friend Sasha Milligan is back. He's over there. Yeah, I know it. We love Sasha. Sasha is awesome. And he's going to kind of go around to the small groups and then we'll reconvene. And we're going to do a lot of questions and answers and kind of talk a little bit more about finances and God. But I do want to say this, and I want to piggyback off of something that Brother Nate taught about several weeks ago. Nate is back, everyone. See Nate back there? Yes. Yeah. He is a smarter and better looking version than all of us. So, you're like, wait a minute, not me. I'm definitely better looking. So we talked about last week about finances and faith in God. And I want to say this before we get going, that in Christendom, in Christianity, historically, very often two mistakes have been made, many more than two, but two big mistakes have been made on both sides of this discussion. And some of you may have been scarred by one of those mistakes, one or the other of those mistakes. Are you ready? One mistake says, to be like God and to be in the favor of God, you must be poor and humble. They take scriptures out of context and say, as Jesus said, the humble will inherit the earth. There are groups that I don't want to get into them, because if you maybe have come from some of those backgrounds, and I don't want to offend anybody. But that has been a historic version of a belief in Christianity that some people have used. For example, there are many priests or people part of the monastic traditions who have to take a vow of poverty. In order to be part of this, they have to take a vow of poverty. That is one area that is in error biblically and scripturally. And we can talk about that if you want offline. And then, more recently, there is another error that's on the older side that says that if you are to be a follower of God, then you have to be prosperous in every way. You need to, and I shouldn't even use the word prosperous, you have to be rich. That God is a genie, and that the people that he loves the most, he gives the most to. And if you are not monetarily wealthy, then it means that you do not have faith. That is an error also. I go to Kenya often, and I promise you there are people there that have more faith than all of us in this room, and yet they live in very difficult situation. That their lack does not make them closer to God, nor does it make them farther from God. There is not a relationship between them, okay? Where the truth is in the middle of those is that God is a good father. And good fathers want the best for their children. And Pastor John is talking about it on Sundays, so I want to encourage you. You can listen on our podcast. You can come, obviously. Listen, God wants you to be prosperous, which is not a monetary state. It is a state where your soul is healthy. It is where you are healthy in relationships. It is where you are productive in your work, in the works of your hand. And God is a good father, and we have lots of good fathers and mothers in here, and they want the best for their children, right? So we can talk all about that later, but I really wanted to kind of step there for a minute, because I know that many of you are sort of scarred by some of the things that you've seen on TV or heard maybe in your past. I know I have, right? The other thing, and I wanted to kind of use the scripture that Nate taught on last week, and this is going to kind of kick off before we get into our small groups. And it is in Joshua 1:9. It says this. If you have your Bible with you, you can use it. It says, study the book of instructions, in the King James says book of the law, continually. Meditate on it day and night so that you will be sure to obey everything that is written on it, only then will you prosper and succeed in all you do. This is how the New King James renders it, and I really like it. It says, and then you shall make your way prosperous. And one of the questions that you're going to get into in your small groups is, what is God's part of our financial security, and what is your part of it, right? And as Sasha so brilliantly explained last week, we absolutely have a part to play in it, and God absolutely has a part to play in it, and his intentions for you are good. Amen?
We asked Sasha to come back because I heard that it was just, there was just so much more we have to cover, and there was so much interest that was piqued from just what he shared last week. So this week, we're going to get into some Q&A. I'll have a mic with me. Sasha's going to share some more. We'll get into some questions and answers, and we'll get down into some more of that practical information that we can utilize right away to start thinking biblically as well as acting biblically when it comes to finances. So please welcome Sasha.
Good evening, guys. I want to start off with I'm enjoying this hopefully more than you are because I'm learning a lot about you all, because I'm going to share a quick story. This happened today, okay? When I was leaving my house, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and I said, Cairo, why don't you go to the mailbox? So she runs over to the mailbox. She struggles to open it. She opens it. She pulls out the mail. She shuts it. She comes back to me in the car, and she goes, here you go, Daddy, bills. And I'm like, why do you think they're bills? She goes, well, my teacher, and she's in fourth grade, she said, my teacher said that if any of us go to our parents and we say bills, we'll hear a groan, like, ugh. And I didn't groan, okay? And she was like, why didn't you groan? I said, because I'm not worried about bills. I'm kind of sick this way. I love when bills show up, because when bills show up, the provision is already there or it's on the way. And that's a different mindset that we get to have, and that's the mindset that you all need to have as well. There are promises that God puts in his word, and a lot of this comes through trust. But that's all that I want to say today. I recognize that you all are millennials, and millennials are different. I'm an Xer, okay? I'm not a baby boomer. I have gray, but I'm not a baby boomer. And when I think about millennials, and we, listen, in my business, we have consultants that come to us all the time that talk about you. And they give us understandings of who you are, how you think, because the way you think is different than how we think. Your experiences are completely different. You grew up in the internet age. I lived in the area where the internet didn't exist. I grew up in an era where email came out and we got excited, and you guys don't even want to be on email anymore, okay? So the way that you're thinking and your experiences as you've grown up to this point is in contrast to a lot of people who are older than you. You're inundated with data, not necessarily information, and you're overwhelmed. There's so much financial information that's out there in the public domain. And you all are the first ones default, let me pick up my phone, let me go on the internet and search. Well, you're searching data. You're not necessarily getting information. And what we want to do is give you information, because if you get the right information, you can apply it and see change in your life. So what we're going to talk about tonight is some of the things that I heard as I was going around, because I heard some commonalities. When we talk about finances, it creates anxiety. It's stressful. I want to avoid it. I haven't necessarily had a lot of experience with it because I grew up in a household where everything was done. And now all of a sudden, I'm faced with making a lot of decisions. And I don't feel that I'm equipped to be able to make some of those. Any of this stuff sound familiar? Yeah, okay. I heard it a couple of different times. So what I want to do, and this is why I was actually asked to come back, is to answer questions. So I came up with a short list of a couple of different areas: student loans, credit cards, credit reports, Social Security, debt payments, I'm opening it up, okay? And I'm willing to take your questions. I will spend a little bit of time talking about this because this is something that I came up with that ministers to me, and the people that I've shared with have really used it, and it's become power for them. And I've heard it, some of your leaders in small groups talk about documenting things and starting somewhere. Progress, seeing measurable progress in your life is important. Okay. The only reason I'm not fit is because I haven't seen any measurable progress in exercise. Okay. And I need to start doing that. Okay. But as it relates to this, real quick, this is just what I talked about last week. It's my age, the year, my oldest daughter, my son, my youngest daughter. LOS stands for length of service that I've worked for my firm. Mortgage is how many, you know, what year am I in my mortgage? How old is my roof? How old is my furnace? What's, you know, how old is my paint job? What was the balance on my 401k at the end of 2017 or the end of 2018? My Roth, my IRA, the educational accounts and savings. That's just one version. This spreadsheet for me is 5 pages long, okay? And the reason that it is, and you get to make up your own. And the reason that it is that you all know, like I shared last time, that I invest in property. So here is property one, and it has the same things. Is there a mortgage? Is there a roof? Is there a paint job? Is there a furnace? Is there a hot water tank? Then property two, I measure everything. Then I take a look at, as an example, when you all start filing taxes, real taxes, not the easy form, but the 1040, there are certain things that I want to track as an example because I want to see measurable progress. I want to see how much did I give. The world, we call it tithes and offerings. The world calls it charitable giving and donations. I want to know, am I making progress from 2015 to 2018 to 2019 to 2020? And the reason I want to know that is because I want to see progress in my life in terms of how I'm stewarding things. But we talked about it last week. I forget who it was. And we were talking about when you sow seeds, you can put a demand on that seed because you have a right to see a harvest. If I've sown and I've sown and I've sown and I've sown, am I expecting my harvest? Am I looking for it? Okay. That's 1040. You can do the same thing with a car. You can do the same thing with whatever God places on your heart. Everything has a season. Everything has a sequential number. And the other reason I think that's important is what I highlighted last week about my kids. These are the years that they're going to be in college. I can talk all day long about wanting to go to Hawaii in the year 2025. But if I have two kids in college, unless I've prepared for that very well, that's probably not going to happen, right? Well, and the reason that the page is these are 4 pages long, and it's easy on Excel spreadsheet, is because I can sit back and say, well, wait a minute. If my roof is 25 years old and my investment property here, this roof is 33 years old, and my kids are going to college in the first year, maybe I need to make that investment a couple years earlier to get that replaced because I'm not going to jeopardize education for a major expense. You can plan things out betterly. Does that make sense? Okay, so I just wanted to give some commentary to that. So I want to open up to questions. Any questions? Yes, sir. Credit cards. I love credit cards. I heard Dave Ramsey mentioned earlier, I'm not a Dave Ramsey disciple. I have nothing bad to say about Dave Ramsey. I just choose not to go that way. Okay, so I'll give you an example of why I think credit cards are important. I think that at the end of the day, debt is not bad. There's good debt and there's bad debt. Okay, you're not going to save 100% of the money that you need to purchase a house. You're probably not going to do that. Okay, so you're going to borrow some money. Well, how do you establish a good credit rating so that you can get a decent mortgage rate? Credit cards. You have to borrow. It's your car and credit cards. Now, I will say one thing about credit cards. And Nate, is there an eraser? It wasn't an eraser. Maybe I'll just use a tissue. One of the things that I do, and I just want to, and I'm going to tie this credit card question into credit report. There are some basic things that you need to be careful about. Number one, overspending. So if you're going to have a credit card, prioritize what you're going to buy. Try to, at best, pay things off at the end of every month. Okay? I use one card. My card, I don't work for the company, is Discover. I put 100% of everything that I buy on Discover. Why? Gas, groceries, clothes, whatever I spend. If I can pay my utility bill, it's going to go on Discover. I could care less. Why? Discover gives me points. Okay? 1 point for every dollar that I spend. So I'm going to use my Discover card all year long. And one of the things that they do is they accumulate these points, and then I can redeem them. Okay, now there's all kinds of different points. I'm not here advocating for Discover. You can go out and get a hotel card. You can go out and get an airline card. You can go out and get a cash back card. There's so many cards, it's ridiculous. I choose Discover, and I'm going to tell you why. I accumulate points. Those points have an equivalent dollar value. Every time that I redeem $20, poof, magic, they give me a $25 gift card. Tell me where else you can go that by me interacting with merchants and buying the basic things that I do, that the card carrier rewards me. And then when I want to redeem my points, they're going to give me a 25% kick. So where do these cards go to? They go to Bed Bath & Beyond, Gap, Old Navy, Macy's, JCPenney. They go to Panera Bread. You're always going to find me. I have, you all may not even know what this stuff is because people don't carry business cards anymore. But there used to be, for the older folks in the room, there used to be this little book, and you'd put all your business cards in there. I carry a small one. It may even be in my bag, actually. Hold on, let me see. I keep one, and I just redeem my gift cards. Yeah, here it is. There's this little bag right here, okay? And whenever I want some cards, I've got some Dunkin' Donuts. I've got a bunch of Home Depot. I've used a bunch of them recently, so there's not as many of them in here as there would be normally. But I just keep this with me. This is my free money bag, okay? And it goes with me everywhere. So when I need to go buy something for my kids, it's off of Discover, okay? It extends my earning potential, and it's tax-free. I'll do that every day of the week. So I love credit cards from that instance, okay? Plus, I'm not going to walk around and get jacked and, you know, my money's going to get stolen. The other thing I will tell you, though, one of the things as it relates to your credit report, this is practical wisdom here. Everybody should go on Credit Karma or an equivalent site to check out your credit score, your FICO score. Your FICO score is just as important as your resume and your college degree because it's the only thing that the financial community values. And if you live in other cities other than Syracuse, New York, you're not even going to be able to rent an apartment with a bad credit score. Okay? That's just real. But here's one of the easy ways to make sure that your credit score is always healthy. One of the things that they do is they take a look at a thing called your utilization ratio. Anybody know what that is? What is it? Close. If your card has a $1,000 limit and you have charged $500 on it, you've used 50%. That is a negative on your credit report. They don't want your utilization ratio to be higher than 30%. Now, I feel bad for people because so many people are living at the $980. And even if you pay it off every month and you charge another $900, your utilization ratio never changes. on that card. And they multiply your utilization ratio based on all the cards. Here's another reason why I advocate credit cards. Have multiple, at least two. Use one. Because if I have another card with $1,000 with a zero balance, I'm at zero, my utilization ratio is 25%. I haven't hurt my credit. Simple. Don't get the store cards, the Macy's card, the JCPenney's card, the Lord & Taylor's card. Get a real card, okay? Visa, Discover, MasterCard, Amex, something, okay? Stay away from that other stuff. The other thing that you can do, if you find yourself in a situation where I have this $900 balance and I'm finding it difficult to pay down because of all the other bills that I have, and you know every month that they're reporting, because they report to the credit bureaus every month what your balance is. If you're not able to bring that down in a meaningful and a significant way, there's other things that you can do. These are called the tricks of the trade or the game. Call up your credit card company and simply say, hi, this is Sasha Milligan. Yeah, I have a card and I'm close to my limit right now. But I need to make some additional purchases, and I would like to request a credit card increase. If you can't bring this down to improve your ratio, if you bring this up, that improves your ratio as well. The person on the phone may simply say, well, how much are you asking for? And you say, well, I would really like $1,000. I say, well, I can't authorize $1,000. Ask the question, how much can you authorize? I can authorize $500. I'll take it. Just simply making that one phone call is going to lower this percentage. Now I'm going to give you some other tricks. Credit card companies are notorious for charging young people 19 and 21%, which is ridiculous. Did you know you could pick up your phone and ask them to lower your rate? Just ask. You have not for you. Ask. Ask not. Okay? It's very simple. If you get this rate to be lowered and you're making the same payment next month and every month thereafter, you're making more progress. You have momentum on your side now. Does that help? Make sense? Okay. Yes, sir. If it's a charge card or a debit card, which one are you talking about? Charge card. I want to get with somebody that I'm going to keep. I'm going to pick on an old bank that is no longer in business, On Bank and Trust Company. Okay, they no longer exist. I'm really not interested in having a bank card or a charge card with On Bank and Trust, because the likelihood that I'm going to continue to maintain that relationship 5-10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, is remote, because that bank might not even be in existence. The other part, and here's why I'm answering the question this way. One of the other factors, other than the utilization ratio that factors into your credit report, is the length, your credit history, the length of time. So I want to establish a nice, and let me say this, this is not all stuff that I lived. Some of the stuff I had to learn the hard way, okay, because you can find your flesh getting in the way of good business sometimes. I had a Citibank credit card that was opened in 1992, okay? And I had that card approximately, I knew better, okay? Roughly about 2011, 2012 time frame, 20-year history. On my credit report for 20 years, every month, he's paid on time, he's never been late. He's paid on time, he's never been late. He's paid on time, he's never been late. That is a tremendous boost to my credit history. Until one day, somebody got in the way and got ticked off because a merchant charged something on there, and it was a reoccurring charge, And if I know I haven't used the card, I don't even look at the mail. I know there ain't nothing on there. And I let it slip. And then that next month, I got this little, and I saw the bill come in again. I'm like, what's this? And I opened it up, and there was a $25 late charge, okay? And I was like, oh, this is going to piss me off, okay? Excuse my language, okay? I hate wasting money on stupid stuff. And I called up the merchant, and they were like, well, Mr. Milligan, you missed your payment. I didn't even know I had a payment. I was like, look, if you guys can't reverse that, I want this card closed. I let stupidity and $25 erase a 20-year positive track record on my credit report. And my score just went down a little bit because all that good history drops off because the account is no longer active. Okay? So, yes, sir. $25? Oh, it depends on the weighting of that card. I mean, you can... One ding on your credit report can drop your score 20, 30 points. It's amazing. Yes, ma'am.
Almost every 6 months, they just increase my credit limit.
Yep.
By it themselves. I don't call. And so at first I was like, is that a bad thing or a good thing? So that is a good thing.
I don't have a problem with it at all.
Because I don't spend anymore. I'm just like, you just keep increasing it. My credit goes up. Okay.
Listen, you'll get to the place, and I don't even know what level credit people are going to get. Okay. It's not uncommon for people to walk around with $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 limits.
Okay.
And at some point in time, if the banks don't see any utilization, then they'll start ratcheting it back down.
Okay.
Okay. But it's not hurting you at all.
Okay.
Yes, sir. They're fine,
oh, they are.
But they don't really help your credit.
Oh, they don't.
It's the way that you get into having access to using plastic in our society, but you're not using credit. You're actually using your own money.
Oh.
Okay. Yes, sir. We're on rapid time, so fire them out.
Does it hurt your credit score to get the checks from Credit Karma, like if you do it a bunch of times?
No, doesn't hurt you at all. That's what the commercial says. Go ahead.
So every semester, I get new student loans dispersed, mm-hmm. and on my credit score, it always counts as a new account, so it really brings down my credit.
That's
age.
Right.
So what can you do to change that?
Great question. One of the things I would tell you to do, and thank you for bringing us to the student loan thing. I think there's a couple of things that you can do for those of you that are facing student loans. Number one, only take out what you need. They want to give you $8,000 and you only need five, and you're like, I'm going to have a really great semester with the other three. Don't do that. Okay. It's that three is going to be the most costly $3,000 that you will ever have in your life. Okay. Take out the minimum of what you need. Number two, one of the things that you can do, yes, it's going to hurt. Okay. There's no way about it. Okay. One of the things that you can do though, is that if you're working during the course of the semester to help yourself out long-term, pay some interest, even though they're deferred, even though you don't have to make a payment, I don't care if it's $100. That $100 over the next 20 years is going to be like $1,000, okay? If you can make consistent payments, if you can really get to the place where you're paying the interest at least, okay? When you graduate, okay, what they do, if you haven't paid any of those student loans or any of that interest, what they're going to say is, well, listen, you took out $8,000 here, you took out $8,000 here, you took out $8,000 here, and $8,000 here. So you took out a total of $24,000 over 2 years. And let's say your junior and senior year, you got scholarships. You didn't even borrow any money, but you never made any payments. That $24,000 has now generated somewhere over the next 2 years, $4,000 of additional interest. So now, instead of giving you four individual loans of 24, they're going to encourage you because you're going to find yourself stressed trying to pay four loans. I got you. They're going to say, we want to entice you. Why don't we consolidate your loans? We'll give you one easy payment. It'll lower your payment. You'll find it easier to work within your budget. And guess what? Now you have one loan at $28,000. That $4,000 of interest is just going to get smacked on there. They're going to consolidate it on, and they're going to stretch it out for 10, 20 years. Okay? It's going to be painful. try not to consolidate those loans. Because the way that you pay off loans real quickly is that, and this is, I did this, okay? You basically take a look at all your loans, you organize them based on the balance. Lowest balance first. The same way you pay off credit cards quick. I'm gonna make the minimum payment here, minimum payment here, minimum payment there, and every extra dollar that I can muster, I'm gonna focus on the payment that has the lowest balance. Once I pay that off, I'm gonna take the principal payment and the interest payment and the extra payment that was down here, and I'm gonna put 100% of that and I'm gonna focus it here and I'm gonna pay that off. That's another powerful thing about spreadsheets and keeping track of things. And one of the last things I'm gonna say, because we're running out of time, it's important when you're doing this strategy to reward yourself. But you have to earn a reward, okay? Tell yourself, if I pay off this and I pay off this, then maybe for a month, I'm gonna take the excess money and I'm gonna do a little trip. And then I'm not gonna do another trip until I pay that one off and I pay that one off, and then I'm gonna go on another trip. You have to build rewards. Hope deferred makes the heart weak, period, okay? Last thing, there's a couple of things that I wanna just quickly show you. This is your life, your lifeline. I'm not gonna worry about 65. You find yourself, this is the day that you're born, you're somewhere on this continuum. Everything in your life is in competition with your present. Everything in your life is in competition with your present. You're single, if you're ever gonna get married, it's in competition with your present. Are you gonna have kids? Times who knows how many? You wanna buy a house? You wanna go on vacay? You wanna have a car? Okay, times how many, okay? College, for you, spouse, kids, at some point in time, your parents may need some assistance, a sibling may get sick and they need some assistance, nieces, nephews, whatever, that's life. That's gonna happen to you. And as a consequence, wherever you all find yourselves, and you guys are at the early onset of this Genesis process, you need to understand that between here and here, life will happen. But your responsibility is not only for this, it's from here on. And every dollar that you earn today needs to address some of this, but it definitely needs to be focused on some of this. I shared something with the group last week. It's a 30 for 30 plan. If you can have $30,000 together by the time you're 30 in a retirement account, automatically day one, start a retirement account. Based on the rule of 72, money doubles typically every 7 years, but let's just go every 10 years. Let's be more conservative. If you have 30 by 30, by 40, that's 60. By 50, that's 120. By 60, that's 240. By the time you age 70, that's $480,000 without ever adding another dime. Your opportunity is here. It's not when you turn 30 to get started or get 40 to get started, because you don't have the compounding nature of money over time. That's a heck of a head start. And if you continue that and you discipline yourself over that period of time, you're going to be in a nice situation. It's available to everybody, not everybody does it. So as I close, I want to encourage you, if you can write this down, you can, or you can ask me about it later. There's a couple books that I encourage you to read. Number one, my favorite book, period, other than the word, is The Richest Man in Babylon. It is the easiest read that you can ever come across. It was written at a time of the Great Depression, and it's set back in Babylonian biblical times. And there is so much wisdom in that book, you'll be blown away, and it's a very easy read. Another book that I encourage you to read or look up is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It challenges you about how you think. Same author, Cash Flow Quadrant. What that book does is it talks about personality styles, and there are four different types of people. There's a worker person, There's a business owner, there's an investor, and there's an employee. You need to figure out who you are. And that book shows you, if you, when you find out what your tendencies are and you don't like those tendencies and you want to go to a different quadrant, it tells you what you need to do. Change your mind. And the last one that I'll put out there is The Magic of Thinking Big. Tremendous book, okay? What am I saying? Read. Not internet searches, not articles. Read books of wisdom that have transcended time. These are the kinds of books that wealthy people read for a reason. People read these books over and over again, sometimes on an annual basis, because people know they need to renew their mind. The world is very astute at doing that. They just don't know that they can read the word as well. We as believers think that all the wisdom that we need is in the world, in the word. And that's true in terms of spiritually. But there is a natural wisdom that we also need to understand of how to navigate this world and prosper in this world. And we need to edify our souls. Amen? Amen. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you again, Sasha. We really appreciate that.